With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right. Happy Earth Day, everyone. Yesterday was Earth Day. Also the birthday of Vladimir Lenin. Total coincidence, I'm sure. Actually, I just want to make a couple of comments on Earth Day because I'm a little ambivalent about it. It actually had a lot of radicals and it led to a lot of what you would call Trojan horse government policy, like looks like it's there to save the climate and or environment or pollution, but they're always a more insidious plan and they've caused a lot of centralized planning and harming economic growth. However, the first Earth Day, if you go back to its roots, had massive participation by the working class, blue collar, middle class. It captured the popular imagination. And the reason for that was corporations were behaving badly. We had every major city was disgusting. Water quality. I was watching old Odd Couple TV from 1970 with my son, 1970, 71. They're talking about the East River in New York. Felix's parrot had died. They were going to bury it. And he's like, I'd rather put it to sea at water. And he goes, well, you've ever seen the East River lately? I mean, and they had a video of it. It was disgusting. So people actually cared. So since that first Earth Day, the public held the companies accountable for pollution, and we have radically improved our air and water quality since 1970, the first Earth Day in the United States, to the point now where the World Health Organization says we have among the cleanest air quality in the world. And the United States leads the way in things like species extinction recovery methods. We know how to save endangered species. We know to do captive breeding to preserve species. We know how to do sustainable agriculture. I shouldn't use the word agriculture. Sustainable logging. Years ago, I did an Amazon rainforest documentary. And even then, this is 25 years ago now, they were detailing how new logging methods were making a tropical forest could be logged. And within 5 to 7 years, you couldn't distinguish that tropical forest that had been logged between the number of plant and animal species from the unlogged portion nearby. That's the kind of environmental successes we've had. We've had radical reductions in pollution continuing. Like I remember the end of the Trump administration, all the unbelievable progress they had made even there, which had already been so far gone. So what Earth Day has evolved into and had a huge elements at its start. I mean, the original Earth Day founder composted his girlfriend. NBC News had the whole story. He killed her and then composted her and put her into a landfill or recycled. He was a murderer. And so there's a lot of wacky people. There's a lot of global cooling fears at the time. And there was a lot of, Marxism and crazy radicals and that have continued on throughout all these Earth Days. And I had gone to interview Chevy Chase at the 2000 Earth Day. And I should actually have footage of this. In fact, I will make a note. There's a lot of good old celebrity footage from me back in the 1990s, in addition to the Rush Limbaugh TV show from my documentaries. But Chevy Chase said, socialism works and Cuba's the model. He said this at the DC Earth Day. And anyway, to make a long story short, the Earth Day and the whole environmental protection isn't really about clean air, clean water, species, deforestation anymore. They've tried to morph it all into climate change and they call CO2 pollution, which it's not. So one of the things they've done, and this is now acknowledged by mainstream media reporters, is they're trying to turn climate into an environmental issue and it just isn't flying. And this is why it's so controversial. And, if you look at the history of the planet, as we just had in the last gift, that makes no difference. So this next thing is the climate narrative is changing. I'm actually featured in this. This is a video done about you'd never know it from the doom and gloom headlines. The United States leads the world in environmental protection. Let's play clip one and a tribute to Earth Day. And yes, you'll see your host in there. Clip one.
Nobel Prize winner saying is there is no climate emergency.
The anti-carbon agenda is the wet blanket on our economy.
Biden's kooky policies are coming for your gas stove, your dishwasher, your water heater, and for your reliable electricity. The result is consumers paying sky-high prices for no environmental benefit.
60% of our energy, our electricity production would come offline.
This is the fact of the matter. Affordable, reliable energy is key to human flourishing.
We've got to defeat them because these people want to end fossil fuels.
We need more natural gas. We need more coal. We need more nuclear. People think batteries from kids made in the Congo are the answer. Battery electricity costs over $400 a kilowatt hour. By comparison, coal is 3 cents.
This is the intentional collapse of our energy, food, and transportation. It's happening right before our eyes. Yes, that's right. They're using a clip of me in this new ad to talk about how Joe Biden's policies are hurting consumers. That was a clip of me from Laura Ingraham in primetime on Fox News. Okay. And it's spreading the good news. This is the premier of Alberta, of Canada, Danielle Smith, dispelling the fantasy thinking behind net zero. Let's watch clip two.
I want to talk about batteries for a minute because I know that everybody thinks that this economy is going to be operated on wind and solar and battery power, and it cannot. There is no industrialized economy in the world operating that way because they need baseload. And I'll tell you what I know about batteries because I talked to somebody who was thinking of investing in it on a 200 megawatt plant. $1 million to be able to get each megawatt stored. That's $200 million for his plant alone, and he would get 1 hour of storage. So if you want me to have 12,000 megawatts of storage, that's $12 billion for 1 hour of storage, $24 billion for 2 hours of storage, $36 billion for 3 hours of storage. And there are long stretches in winter where we can go weeks without wind or solar. That is the reason why we need legitimate, real solutions that rely on baseload power rather than fantasy thinking. And I am not going to engage in fantasy thinking and say something is possible when I know that my principal job...
I think we need to stop.
My principal job is to have a reliable energy grid. That's what I'm trying to do.
Well said. And we need more politicians. I think she still accepts the premise that climate change is a problem, although I'm not 100% sure. That's Danielle Smith, the premier of Alberta in Canada. But she's speaking rationally on energy policy. And that, my friend, is a very refreshing idea. All right. I love this next one. Someone compiled the apocalyptic sea level. Remember, Al Gore's film showed us Florida half underwater if we didn't change our ways. Remember, 1864, Abraham Lincoln was president. An academic named George Marsh Perkins warned of climatic excess unless mankind changes evil ways. Well, this is what happens when you don't listen to such warnings. Clip three, what you're going to see here is sea level rise. It's basically non-existent. And you can look at this on all the coasts. It's just, even if the sea's been rising for 10,000 plus years since the end of the Little Ice Age, there's no acceleration. Steve Koonin, a former Obama administration scientist in the Energy Department, physicist, has written a book about this, about his descent on climate in the Obama administration. And that's one of his key points, is the sea level's not accelerating. Well, just watch this clip, clip three, and you'll see the development is accelerating. So anytime you have a natural disaster storm, oh, it's going to cost a lot more because we're developing our coastlines. But take a look at this from 1980 to 2024, and you'll be remarkable of how sea level doesn't seem to be rising. And there you saw it, all the development coming in on the land, but the sea is not rising. Okay. And people think, well, we need green energy to fight this. Is green energy really green? This is a former guest on the show, just on, I believe, about 2 weeks ago, the head of the International Climate Science Coalition, Tom Harris, on wind turbines requiring fossil fuels to make sure that they burn. Fossil fuels burn 90% of the time to keep the wind turbines going. Clip four.
Wind turbines require enormous amounts of steel and iron.
A windmill will need about 100 times more steel, iron, and other materials to generate the same electrical capacity as a gas-fired fossil fuel plant. This is a huge expense and has devastating environmental impacts. Even after the wind turbines are installed, they require a backup fossil fuel plant that continues burning 90% of the time, making the wind turbine largely unnecessary and, in essence, just for show. Looking into some more details in Alex Epstein's book, The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels, we can see that compared to gas-fired power plants, windmills also need 100 times more mining of ores and coal, 100 times more power for smelting, forging, and casting, 100 times more cement and excavations and destruction of forests and hills, and 100 times more transportation and installation costs. This is a far cry from the environmentally friendly image that is presented to the public. To learn more about this and other topics in climate change, please visit icsc-canada.com.
That was Tom Harris, International Climate Science Coalition, and he's spot on. Just to tell you, the documentary Juice debunks this claim of wind and solar as being somehow earth-friendly. To make one wind turbine, you have to extract 900 tons of steel, 2,500 tons of concrete, 45 tons of non-renewable plastic. 900 tons of steel, 2,500 tons of concrete, 45 tons of non-renewable plastic to make one wind turbine. And that's not all. You're leaking oil everywhere to make a typical wind farm. To run a typical wind farm, you have to have an average of 12,000 gallons of oil are needed. Who would have thought that green energy used oil? This is the world in which we live. All right, the other world in which we live, related. I mentioned this yesterday on the show, and here's the story. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., his entire career, the river keepers. He's been an environmental activist, a lawyer. He's been beloved. He's been, Time magazine's honored him. He's been fated, the Kennedy family. He's a solid environmentalist, right? Guess what? He's running for president. He now says he won't talk about climate change. He's not going to try to convince you that climate change agenda has been hijacked by the World Economic Forum and the United Nations for totalitarian control of society. Wow. So what's happened? This, as of Earth Day 2024, RFK's environmental colleagues turn on him. They urge him to drop his presidential bid. Well, why? They declare RFK Jr. to be a dangerous conspiracy theorist and a science denier, that's in quotes, who promotes toxic beliefs, in quotes, on climate change. RFK Jr. now being attacked by his former colleagues, who he worked with for decades as the lead, one of the lead environmentalists in the United States, in the world, is now being called a science denier with toxic beliefs on climate change. The world sure can change. A dozen national organizations have issued an open letter calling him a science denier. These are all his old friends. I love these quotes. "The Bobby I know is gone," said Dan Reichscher, senior energy researcher at Stanford University's Woods Institute for the Environment, major environmental group. Gina McCarthy, the former EPA of Biden under President Biden, "If folks remember RFK as an environmentalist, he is no more," she said about Mr. Kennedy. "He's against science. He's against vaccines. He talks jibber jabber on climate. I don't know what he stands for." Wow. Once again, I'm being lured. I'm really interested in voting for RFK Jr. again. "Mr. Kennedy's views on climate change are unconventional." By the way, this is a report in the New York Times. That's how important. That's how much of a threat RFK Jr. is to the Biden regime. The New York Times is now doing this. They're sending the signal out that we have to attack and take down RFK Jr. on his strongest issue, environmental activist, which is what he made his career out of. This is the New York Times talking. "Mr. Kennedy's views on climate change are unconventional. He agrees with the overwhelming scientific opinion that carbon dioxide, methane, two greenhouse gases are heating the planet, and that evidence is visible. All my senses are telling me warming is occurring," he said in July of last year. But in the same video, RFK Jr. also said that a, quote, war on carbon, unquote, was not the answer, and that the climate crisis is being used as a pretext for clamping down totalitarian controls. You know what? I can deal with a climate believer like this because we would agree on the policy. This is fantastic. RFK said that the actors behind the clampdown for totalitarian control are the intelligence agencies, the World Economic Forum, the billionaire club at Davos, and their goal was to make the rich more wealthy. But moments later, he said the free markets would solve the climate crisis. Win, win, win. Wow. So far, he's hitting it out of the park on climate. Mr. Kennedy said he opposed federal subsidies for carbon capture and storage. Boom, bingo, fantastic. A technology to capture greenhouse gases before they reach the atmosphere. Mr. Kennedy called carbon capture, quote, a useless and huge boondoggle to the industry. Ding, 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 ding. Fully agree. Mr. Kennedy, RFK Jr. criticized Mr. Biden for agreeing to include those subsidies in the Inflation Reduction Act. On Thursday, RFK said eliminating subsidies for fossil fuels and tougher enforcement of existing laws like the Clean Water Act and Clean Air Act would be sufficient to fight climate change. Okay, we start parting ways here only because I don't like acts that were passed in the 70s and then repassed in the early 90s to be just redefined as climate change. Unless you're passing new legislation, I don't want some new interpretation of a law never designed to deal with it. That's how you get into clamp down for totalitarian control. I think this is where Kennedy loses me. John Hamilton Adams, who co-founded the Natural Resources Defense Council and hired Mr. Kennedy in the 1980s, said in a statement, I mentored Bobby as a young environmentalist. I do not recognize the person he has become. His actions are a betrayal to our environment, unquote. Whew. Wow. So 80% here, pretty solid from the New York Times. I think I would be lured in to voting for RFK Jr. based on what I'm seeing here. All right, let's go here. The final clip of the day. Rob Schneider, the comedian, in many funny movies, a friend of Kevin James, he's been in a lot of his films. Wokeness is on its last legs. Here he is on Fox News, the comedian, actor, entertainer, Rob Schneider, who's been red-pilled, is now out and out as a conservative. Warning about, hopefully he's correct, but let's see what he has to say. Clip five, Rob Schneider on wokeness.
You guys are attacking wokeness. Is wokeness in comedy on its last legs?
Well, I think it has to be. It has to be close to collapse, as my good friend James Lindsay said. It's about 12, 18 months before it collapses. It's entrenched power. And like right now, the Democrats have the entrenched power. It's the party, the Democrats now suddenly turned to not be the party of the people. Now they're the party of forever wars, and they're the party of censorship. And there's a direct proof now, thanks to Elon Musk buying Twitter, for $44 billion. That was a nice little thing to do on the weekend. Is that you could see that there's actual, talk about collusion with Russia. We have collusion, First Amendment, and of course the Justice Department will do nothing about it. But there's proof that the United States government colluded and told social media what they wanted to do. And that's a direct violation of Americans' First Amendment rights.
Well, let's hope Rob Schneider's right, because actually that's very important. If wokeness leaves comedy, that's one of the biggest things we can hope for. I'm really impressed more and more every day with Jerry Seinfeld, who's been speaking out for years against wokeness, against the snowflakes on college campuses who can't handle anything that may offend them. He has been spot on. He has been strong, free speech advocate, comedy advocate. The comedians just might save us from this wokeness virus in the end. We'll see. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by author Drew Thomas Allen, whose new book, America's Last Stand, Will You Vote to Save or Destroy America in 2024? How will you vote? We'll be right back with Drew Thomas Allen. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.
TNT's Pella Neuroth-Taylor.
It'd be interesting that if this is kind of Britain's recent soft power exports, we know that the transgender debate and the Scottish censorship law made shockwaves around the world. Who would have thought that Brexit Britain, this country that was founded in the spirit of liberty and for whom Brexit was supposed to be a relaunch of Britain as a country of liberty, has now seems to be exporting censorious attitudes and laws because Just as the smoking ban in pubs law was exported from the British Isles, Ireland, actually, they very quickly spread to the rest of Europe. This law might spread equally quickly. We don't know. So within 5 years' time, a smoking ban for teenagers and then kept up as they grow older might spread to the whole of Europe. So Europeans, listen up.
Pella Nuroff-Taylor on today's News Talk TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTRadio.live.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, joining us now is Drew Thomas Allen, author of the new book, America's Last Stand, Will You Vote to Save or Destroy America in 2024? Welcome to Unleashed, Tom. Drew.
Hey, it's good to be with you, always.
All right. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, what's your background? What led you to write this book? Why did you feel compelled to write about America's last stand in 2024? My first question would be, don't they say that about every election? But I really do think 2024, this really is the Waterloo, if you will, for America. But go ahead. What led you to write this book?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I think intellectually we can certainly prove, obviously, that this election is more significant than others, that more is at stake. But I think that people even understand in their gut that this is something different, something special, something dangerous, actually. And, you know, I'd say, you know, if you look at what's happening at Columbia University right now, I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, you've got professors who are Jewish or pro-Israel that are told they're not safe on campus. They're not actually allowed on campus because the university says they can't guarantee their safety. That's where we are in America today. And it's an existential question. I mean, do you want to live in a country where every day is like Columbia University right now? Or do you want to go back to a place that has peace? That doesn't have unrest? I mean, all of the leftist ideology, really the microcosm of it, if you boil it down, it's what you're seeing at Columbia. It is radical, violent protesters who seek to create instability and of course, attack their political opponents. And that is all left-leaning ideology. But I saw that this was happening in America, like many people did. I knew that it was going to be a rematch between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And there were a million different indicators out there. Maybe the most important is what you're seeing right now in New York City with this criminal trial against Donald Trump over something that is not a crime. And so it's difficult to talk about because you're trying to explain that the sky is blue to somebody who doesn't believe that to be true. But these are things that are existential threats to America, and we face a decision. Are we going to rebuke tyranny and say it does not have a place here in America, or are we going to embrace it and allow the founding fathers' dream to slip away?
Wow, and there really is so much at stake. How much do you think the COVID lockdowns accelerated just this insanity? The idea that government, unelected bureaucrats could just wake up one day and say, schools closed, churches closed, stay-at-home orders, we're going to be social distancing, vaccine mandates, all your medical procedures canceled, weddings, funeral. And by the way, no one's voting on it because we're in a crisis. Do you think that had an impact two ways? A, exposing how many Americans were just sheep and willing to be led on this propaganda. And two, did it red pill a lot of people to realize, you know, this is not okay in America? How did that lead you? How do you think that's going to impact the 2024 election?
Yeah, well, I mean, in addition to the fact that the COVID lockdowns, of course, were used to fundamentally alter the way we conduct elections. So those changed the outcome, in my opinion, yes. I make the case in the book too, of the 2020 election, period. But on top of that, yeah, I mean, it was really scary because I don't think it did red pill a lot of people. So that's a silver lining. People are waking up. Now we've got to help them connect the dots and realize that it's not enough to just say you don't like the Democrat Party, you don't like the Uniparty, you don't like the deep state. You've got to actually make a decision to pull the trigger and vote for Trump to help us get out of this quagmire if we're going to have a fighting chance in 2024. But it accelerated things massively. I was shocked. And again, this is not a sob story, but I think people can relate to it out there. I grew up with Democrat friends. I have always been a conservative, but I went to an elitist all-male college preparatory school in Dallas, Jesuit, okay? Left-leaning school, left-leaning doctrine, Democrat friends. I worked in Hollywood for a long time. I lived in Milan, Italy. I used to work for Marc Jacobs in fashion. I lived in New York City. So those are the worlds I grew up in. So these people accepted me until 2020, until 2020. And all of those people, when you saw the Democrats and others that were of a tyrannical mindset, decided to squash our liberties and basically tell us our constitutional rights were suspended. And furthermore, they created an atmosphere that was not hospitable to people like me, who obviously understood what was going on, pointed out the fact that these mandates and everything were not only unconstitutional, but they were harmful, detrimental to our children, to ourselves, to our health at large. And these people are no longer friends of mine. Not because I said, hey, you guys are too extreme for me. They compared me basically to Adolf Hitler because I, you know, supported Trump over Joe Biden. And so that was what was scary to me. See, I don't actually, Mark, I don't really fear the minority of lunatic politicians out there that are tyrants. What I fear is the American people that go along with it, right? I mean, Hitler and the Nazi regime and all that sort of stuff, yeah, bad news. But it never could have happened without the complicit nature of the German citizenry, right, who went along with it and supported it. See, so I actually fear my neighbor who would be cheering if the FBI showed up my house after this interview and hauled me off to incarcerate me for the rest of my life simply because I'm having a conversation they don't like with Mark Morano.
Now, let's explore that. You were absolutely right. I mean, people looked at you, your friends stopped talking to you. That's amazing. I don't think your friends would have stopped talking to you if you said you supported Mitt Romney or John McCain. You know, maybe a few in Hollywood if you said George W. Bush during the height of like the Iraq War. Or Bob Dole in 96, or George H.W. Bush. Why is Trump such a lightning rod? Why does he trigger people to do those? That's irrational to say, I'm not going to talk to you, a lifelong friend or an old time friend, because you like Donald Trump or you're planning on voting for him. Where did that come from in America? That's not the America that we grew up in. I mean, maybe it was always in America of a small liberal circle like in Hollywood, but it wasn't. It seems like that's really spread among a lot of the Democrats and liberals.
Yeah, well, it doesn't really say as much about Trump as it does the left. Now, most of the things they've said about Trump aren't true anyway, but even in my book, you know, I talk about the fact that most of what you've been told isn't true, and that which may be true pales in comparison to the reality and loathsome reputation of Joe Biden or any other Democrat for that matter. So it's not even real. But what it shows is, as much as the Democrats want to label MAGA a cult and everything else, the left is the real cult. You know, you're in a cult when a party, for example, can repeatedly do a 180 on their own policies and beliefs, and you have a supportive body of Democrat voters that will simply adopt that as their new position. So, for example, I happen to be pro-life. I am a proud Christian. I am a conservative. And so if the Republican Party tomorrow told me that they supported abortion, you know, without limits like the Democrats do, I would absolutely turn my back on them, right? But in the Democrat Party, you don't have that. So what you do is you have a group of people who are listless vessels, if you will. I think that was a DeSantis thing that maybe got a little misconstrued about Trump supporters, though, in the thick of the battle between DeSantis and Trump. But they really are these kind of listless vessels, if you will, that simply go where the Democrat Party blows them. And their allegiance is, as Washington warned, said it was dangerous. Their allegiance is to party over country. And they don't actually have principles. Their principles are whatever the Democrat Party demands or tells them. It's pretty frightening.
Yeah, let's talk on one aspect of the evolution of the Democratic Party. If you go back to 1960s, 70s, very anti-war party in many sense, and they were all about free speech, dissent. It wasn't like, well, if the Pentagon says it, it's misinformation if you disagree, which is basically what they'll say now, you know, on anything. How did the Democratic Party embrace mass censorship, mass cancel culture, mass suppression of any kind of dissent in America? How did that evolve and where did that come from? That to me is one of the most disturbing things about, I guess you'd call it, the new Democratic Party.
Yeah, look, there were certainly a lot of Democrat voters and things throughout the 60s and 70s that were really did represent the counterculture. They were anti-war. I think these were actually values that they had that were real. But the problem is at the top, at the party level, the Democrat Party itself has never had principles. Everything they have done has been about expanding their political power. So, for example, their entire history, they, of course, were the anti-Black party. They were the de facto party of racism in America. At every turn, they sabotaged and prevented Republicans from passing civil rights legislation, for example. So, you know, one of the things, and I go into this in depth in the book, but one of the things you have to understand about the Democrat Party, too, is they put out something that's a lie that's called the myth of the big switch, I call it, which is where they claim that when LBJ signed actually his assassinated predecessor's civil rights bill, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 into law, they claimed that that's the moment that Democrats became the de facto party of Blacks and Republicans just suddenly abandoned their own history of defending Blacks, you know, the party of Abraham Lincoln and all that, and that there was just this switch of parties. None of that happened. The Democrat Party, for example, has used Blacks since basically the Great Depression. So they decided early on when Herbert Hoover lost the election to FDR, when they finally got a majority of the Black vote, they hitched their wagon to the Black vote. So these people lived in densely populated cities and they relied upon the Black vote to win elections. And they knew that if they didn't win that voting block, which, I mean, it's unheard of. It is remarkable because basically almost 100% of Blacks would vote in support for Democrats, buying this lie that Democrats have their back. And so anyway, my point is, whenever they shift, whether it's censorship, whether it's adopting a pro-war, it doesn't make sense because it doesn't come from a place of any sound ideology, except that the Democrat Party is in the business of increasing their own political power. So if that means changing your position, they'll do it.
Wow. Well, on that note, why is Donald Trump, in your view, polling and getting record amounts of African-American votes, record Hispanic vote, beyond any Republican nominee probably in the last 50 years? What's going on there? Why is he drawing in minority voters? And is that concerning the Democrats?
Well, it's definitely a concern of theirs. Look, they know what they're doing with the open border right now, by the way. They are trying to replace not just Americans, but Black Americans, too. They basically, if you look at the Democrat Party, they're starting to open their eyes and kind of give up on Blacks to some extent right now and saying, OK, well, screw it. You guys, we don't have you anymore. We're just going to replace you with a bunch of illegal immigrants. But the reason Donald Trump is such a threat is because he's not a politician. He still is not a politician. He may be the most authentic person that's ever run for political office. He has never changed. He doesn't even apologize for who he is. Grab him by the whatever video. It's locker room talk. You know, he doesn't run. See, that October surprise in 2016, that would have destroyed Mitt Romney. It would have destroyed any other Republican who'd ever run for office, but not Donald Trump, because he represented the new Republican Party in some ways, which is you're not going to give the Democrats ammunition. You're not going to buy their premises. You're not going to allow them to set the tone. And so you have a situation where it's kind of perfect timing because Blacks are looking around and they're getting demolished even worse than other Americans, just like the Great Depression era. And they're saying, OK, after all this loyalty, what have we gotten from you? Nothing. And Trump isn't going in there and putting on some accent or cadence, pretending like he's a Black person like Hillary Clinton would do or some other Democrat. He just goes in there and speaks to them like a human being. And, you know, it's effective because you have somebody who's real, who's not pandering. And that goes a long way with people.
It does. You mentioned that, you know, the grab the pussy comment. There was no hypocrisy involved. Everyone knew that sounds like Donald Trump. It sounded like Donald Trump on Howard Stern's show, which he was on many times. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, there's another side to Donald Trump we didn't know about. And I think that's why he weathered it, because it showed how authentic he was, as bizarre as that sounds. You know, I don't want to defend what he said necessarily, but okay. So you have why is Donald Trump somehow become the savior? Where did he come from in terms of the Republican Party, and what happens after him? I mean, this election, if he wins, obviously he can serve 4 years, and hopefully he'll have learned that appointees matter and he won't fall into the trap of recycling a lot of Bush-Cheney appointees again, or previous Republicans. What do you think? What do you think an unleashed Donald Trump would do in his second term? And what happens to the Republican Party after Donald Trump? Who's in line to replace him?
Nobody's in line to replace him currently. And I don't think anybody can even imagine it or wants to imagine it, because, you know, what's required right now is a bull in a china shop. That's what we actually need, because Washington, D.C. needs to be destroyed. I really do sincerely mean that. Obviously not physical violence, right? You know, I shouldn't have to explain that on our side.
You're going to get a call from the FBI here shortly. So no, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, if it hasn't happened yet, I'm overdue, you know, actually. I mean, look, the fundamental problem in America right now that people just need to understand at its essence is, you know, our Constitution and the founding fathers, you know, they of course understood that government was a necessary evil. You've got to have one. And of course, they feared it devolving into a tyranny like happens, because that is mankind's nature. You have tyrants, Napoleon Bonaparte, that rise to the top and aspire to a position beyond the limitations of the Constitution. Abraham Lincoln warned about this. You know, I'm not a genius. I just study the geniuses, you know. And the issue now is our Constitution says that we, the people, are master, and those in government are our servant. Well, many Americans believe that the reverse is true, and the politicians behave as if the reverse is true, that they again are master and we are servants, that our rights aren't unalienable. They are granted to us generously, bestowed upon us by Joe Biden and other bureaucrats and Democrats in Washington, D.C. And you can look at what's happening in Congress with, you know, the controversy regarding spending all this money to prop up Ukraine, to send money overseas without securing our own border. And the point is, when people like even a Speaker Mike Johnson go to Washington, D.C., they may start out like Mr. Smith in the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, be this, you know, Boy Scout leader who loves America and everything else. But once they get to Washington, D.C., they don't actually represent their constituents. They represent the government. So what the U.S. government and politicians want is not the same thing that the American people want. What they actually want and do is to their benefit and our detriment. So someone like Speaker Mike Johnson and all these congressmen, they do not actually represent the American people. They represent the uniparty, if you will. They represent politicians. They represent D.C., and they don't care anything about the American people. And that's the civil war we're in.
I do have a question, then we're going to take a break. But what happened to Speaker Johnson? I feel like he's been a huge disappointment. On paper, he looked like a great choice to be a speaker for the Republican Party, but he just feels like he slipped right into uniparty mode. Do you have any insight into that?
Well, there's been speculation about typical blackmail and things like that. I think at the end of the day, he's just a coward. Speaker Mike Johnson is an absolute de facto neutered, castrated coward. That's what he is. And he can hide behind his Christianity all day long and tell me that Jesus Christ spoke to him in the night and told him to do 180s on all his positions and join in with the deep state. But that's not a winning message, in my opinion. So no, he just, he gave in to the pressure of Washington, D.C. And that's the problem. You know, I live in California, I work in politics, but I remain this genius untouched by the dirtiness because I stay away from it.
Wow. I got to say, I love your analysis. That's very good of Speaker Thomas, Peter Thomas. Very well done. We're talking with Drew Thomas Allen, author of America's Last Stand. Will you vote to save or destroy America in 2024? We'll be right back after these messages to continue our discussion. Stay tuned.
Sometimes life can be overwhelming, and suicide may seem like the only way to relieve the pain. Beyond Now is an evidence-based app created by Beyond Blue to help you cope when suicidal thoughts start to appear. You can use it to create an easy-to-follow plan that is personal to you and includes steps like know your warning signs so you can act early, make your environment safe by removing harmful items, activities you can do or people you can be with to distract yourself from suicidal thoughts, reminders of things that make you feel strong. Some of these steps might be tough to fill out, and that's okay. It can be helpful to make or share your safety plan with a trusted friend, family member or mental health professional. You might feel like you're alone, but help is available. If you're worried you can't stay safe, use the red telephone icon to call your emergency contacts. Download the free Beyond Now app today to create your personal safety plan.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
From climate change to energy and environmental matters, you're listening to Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We're talking with Drew Thomas Allen, author of America's Last Stand, Will You Vote to Save or Destroy Democracy? Sorry, avoid destroy America in 2024. I guess you could vote to destroy democracy as well. Back to Speaker Thomas for a minute. There's a movement afoot saying, oh, if they take him out again using the same procedural rules like Matt Gaetz and others the last time, we'd end up with a Democrat House Speaker. Is there an argument to be made that that may actually be a good thing to send a message to the Uniparty, or could a lot of damage happen between now and the end of this Congress with a Democrat Speaker?
Well, I think the biggest fear is that in a worst case scenario, you would have essentially a tie in the Electoral College, and the House of Representatives would then determine who the next president was going to be. And if you had Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats in control, obviously they could select Joe Biden over Trump. Now, that's kind of a lot can happen. I'm very concerned. Nothing is off the table. I don't know. I mean, yeah, if you had... I don't know that it makes a difference in many ways, apart from that situation, whether you have Hakeem Jeffries or Speaker Mike Johnson. That's a sad thing to admit. I have pondered this at length, whether or not, because he has betrayed the American people and his constituents. There's no doubt about that. But I think that what people need to try and digest, as hard as it is that Speaker Mike Johnson is probably the best we can get. And what I mean by that is Mike Johnson is the tip of the iceberg. So what I point to, for example, is we got Mike McCarthy, right? And he did many of the things Mike Johnson's doing. He threw in with the budget bill with Joe Biden. He betrayed conservatives, Republicans as well. But when he was ousted, there was a big movement to try and elect Jim Jordan, Speaker Jim Jordan. We wanted Speaker Jim Jordan instead, a real staunch conservative, and he couldn't win. If you recall, there was actually I think publicly 12 or 15 people came out against him. But what they did is behind closed doors, so that nobody would actually know the identities, they did a secret ballot, and over 100 Republicans voted against Jim Jordan, which tells you that there are over 100 House Republicans, not 12 or 15, that are part of the Uniparty. And so the reality is, if you got rid of Mike Johnson, the same people would not allow you suddenly to get Jim Jordan or someone that would be beneficial. In other words, no matter who is put up, no matter who the American people want, we're not going to get what we want. So you can go from McCarthy, and then you get Mike Johnson, and then you can get somebody else if you want. And no matter who they elect, because they have the power in numbers, they're not going to serve the interests of the American people. They're going to serve the Uniparty. And so McCarthy is no different than Mike Johnson, because that's how Washington, D.C. operates right now. And the sad truth is, yeah, go ahead.
Well, it just angers me, because someone like Mike Johnson, really, if you looked at him, this shouldn't have happened, at least on paper. What is it? I mean, this was rapid, too. Normally, someone gets elected, they're in for, 10, 12 years, they grow more establishment, and they become indistinguishable. The longer they're in, the more liberal they become. This was like dramatic and overnight and incredible. And I think the coward word you said really strikes it. It's like, he just went along. I mean, they just feel like they owe their whole life. Are they threatened? I mean, this is just nuts. At least on paper, he should have been a lot better. It's incredible how fast they crumble. And this is, of course, the story of every Republican nominee. My first vote for president in 1988, I voted for Ron Paul as a libertarian. I did not vote for George H.W. Bush. 92, I think I voted for Andre Mourou. 96, Pat Buchanan. I think the only time I voted Republican was for George W. Bush. That's because I hated John Kerry so much. And I did vote for McCain because of Palin. I don't think I voted for Romney. I don't remember that now, but I've always tried to vote. Anyway, my point, though, is all of these Republican nominees were all uniparty, except for Donald Trump. It's Reagan and then Donald Trump. So they are few and far between. So the question is, if Jim Jordan had been speaker, would he have done this? Would he have pulled the Mike Johnson? Would he have collapsed, you think? Is that possible? I mean, at this point, I'm willing to believe anything.
Yeah, I think it's possible that even somebody like Jim Jordan could have collapsed as well. But obviously, they had fear of Jim Jordan because they sabotaged him getting the gavel, and they had no problem. I mean, I got to be honest, I'd never heard of Speaker Mike Johnson before. I'd never heard of him. He's in Louisiana. Nobody. I mean, you know, whatever. That's fine. Yeah. But I'd never heard his name, and he came out of nowhere as this consensus candidate that got all the votes. And you're right, on paper, he's good. I mean, if you go back and look at him in 2016, when he first was running for House, he's exactly what you'd want. But yeah. I mean, this is about a flex in Washington, D.C. If people pulled back the curtain a little bit and really understood just how corrupt Washington, D.C. is, I think they'd give up on the country. And we can't give up on the country. But I'm just telling you, I mean, I can imagine, you know, the perfect example for me, like the red line in the sand was his reversal on FISA. So the FBI is an enemy of the American people. That's not hyperbole. They are the Gestapo of the deep state. And every regime in history that wants and looks for tyranny and totalitarianism, they have to have a enforcement mechanism. And that's what the FBI has become, the United States of America. Now, never mind the fact that the FBI never does its actual job. So you hear time and time again, you have a mass shooting and the FBI was alerted of it, did nothing, and the mass shooting takes place. You know, you always find out this information. The FBI, of course, spied illegally on American citizens abusing FISA, this very measure that they have voted to, you know, renew. They did it, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of times. And we know what the FBI is. And so the American people say, no, you don't reward the FBI after the abuses that the American people have suffered at their hands. And Speaker Mike Johnson took that position. And then he goes behind closed doors with, you know, the FBI, the people that tell him what? Well, hey, look, we really need this power because there could be a terrorist attack. And if there is a terrorist attack, it will be because you did not renew this measure. So it's a scare tactic. It's a scare tactic. And of course, you can justify any seizure of any power, constitutional, you know, any of your fundamental unalienable rights under the guise of protection. So, okay, we'll keep you safe, but you need to give up free speech. You need to give up your Second Amendment right to bear arms. And so, you know, who knows behind closed doors, but, you know, they scared him.
I don't want to get too far off topic, but what's your view of the TikTok ban? I mean, my view is I can't imagine allowing a deep state intelligence agencies to tell Americans, you can't have this app. We need to ban it. It sets a horrible precedent. I'm tempted to download TikTok on my phone as a protest. I mean, I'd rather the Chinese spy on me than the U.S. government ban what apps I can have and set that precedent. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I wrote pretty extensively about this one. I absolutely oppose this measure to force the sale of TikTok. Now, obviously, I don't disagree that the communist Chinese are using TikTok to gather data, but TikTok's not more dangerous than Facebook or Twitter was. And if you force the sale of TikTok, you know, who's going to buy it? I'm safer with the communist Chinese having a minority stake in TikTok than if Mark Zuckerberg buys it. It's a joke.
Bingo. Not only that, but Bill Gates is America's single largest farmland owner, according to NBC News. edging out China. China, there was a fear of a Chinese land agricultural land monopoly. In my mind, I'd rather China own more farmland than Bill Gates. Why? Because we're naturally suspicious and we'll fight China and we can always revoke it. It's a foreign entity. Bill Gates comes in and tells everyone, hey, we need to shut down agriculture, move it to a laboratory. We need lab-grown meat. And we now have a FDA approving lab-grown meat for human consumption for the first time in U.S. history last year. So it's really, I think we're more of a threat from domestic than we are from any foreign entity. All right, we're off topic though, but let's go back to 2024 election here. In terms of, you referenced it earlier in our conversation about, you know, COVID had affected the ballot access. What do you think about A, the mail-in balloting, any COVID leftover restrictions, any reforms that have happened? Can we actually get a fair election? Can Donald Trump get a fair election in 2024? How do the swing states look? Do they look like there's going to be enough monitoring? Are we going to be able to prevent this? Is there going to be scrutiny of all these floods of mail-in unverified ballots? What does your analysis say?
Well, I'm hopeful that the Republican Party is taking precautions and being proactive to shore up some of the election integrity in these different states. And they are making an effort. Now, the Democrats have a highly funded machine led by Mark Elias that goes around suing every Republican challenge to mail-in ballots or anything all over the country. So it is a war. It's not going to be a fair election in 2024. It doesn't mean that we can't prevail and win, but we have to overcome cheating and we have to overcome election interference and we have to overcome a number of factors. Now, we don't know if there's going to be something else that happens before 2024. You mentioned, a climate emergency, things like this that people yeah. discuss. We need to be careful. I'm not, the thing that's happening now is that so many conspiracy theories have been proven not to be conspiracy theories at all, yeah. but reality, the issue is now it's almost like everything's a conspiracy theory and, it's like everyone's a racist, so it doesn't mean anything. Everything's a conspiracy theory. So it's like, it kind of waters down, some of the topics. But, illegals are going to be used to vote in 2024, 100%. That's not even questionable right now. The question is, will we have enough numbers to overcome whatever percentage they're able to succeed in terms of cheating, whether it's 1%, 2%? What is it? What's the margin going to be? And people shouldn't be afraid to talk about Democrats cheating. They cheat all the time. They cheat against one another. And they certainly cheat in national elections, especially at this moment in American history when they fear losing everything they've worked so hard to achieve, which is tyranny. And, climate change, I know you're an expert in that. I mean, that's the next step, from COVID to yeah. climate change, that hoax. That's what they're using to try and finish the job.
Yeah. We know RFK Jr. is scaring the hell out of the Democrats right now. You have the New York Times over the weekend, a whole article, environmental colleagues of decades, turn on RFK Jr. He's not the same. He's a science denier. They don't let his new position, which is phenomenal, and I wish the Republican Party would adopt it. They don't have to talk science at all, is I'm not going to talk about climate change. Climate change has been hijacked for totalitarian control by the Davos billionaires and the World Economic Forum and the United Nations. Bingo, that's your climate position. That's all you need to say. He's being attacked now from Obama's former EPA. How afraid are the Democrats of RFK Jr. right now in terms of being a spoiler? I mean, if he gets, Ross Perot got 19% in 92 nationally. And in key states, I mean, could RFK swing some major states to Donald Trump that people aren't expecting?
Yeah, he could. I mean, there was a moment where I thought maybe he could do damage to Donald Trump, but then he chose Shanahan as his vice president. And I said, okay, well, that's done. Now he's going to be public enemy number one. I mean, after Trump, they're going to go after RFK Jr. And of course he could upset things. And, and I'm fine with that. The next best thing, I would encourage Democrats to vote for Trump, but if they're not going to vote for Trump and they voted for Biden last time, vote for RFK Jr. No problem with that whatsoever.
Yeah, RFK really he is phenomenal. I think his foreign policy sounds phenomenal. And I think his free speech sounds phenomenal. And his reforms of public health are phenomenal. He really, really is one of the most articulate people. He and Vivek Ramaswamy are probably the two most articulate candidates to have run. I don't know how much I trust Vivek, but he's a great talker. All right. Well, the final, less about 1 minute left. Give us your prediction. You know, this is a fight for democracy. Will we vote to save or destroy America? How do you think? Will we vote to save or destroy? What's your prediction here? And sitting here in April of 2024.
Look, I've got to be optimistic on this issue. And, you know, I wrote a book to try and encourage people and convince people also about the stakes and what was necessary to save the country in 2024. We're part of history right now. And what we do is going to really echo in eternity, you know, as they said in Gladiator. And I'm hopeful, but people need to also be on high alert, because if and when Donald Trump is reelected, the pain isn't over. It's actually going to be heightened. And we're going to need American citizens to really man up and become adults and stand up to the basically, I mean, it's going to be unprecedented, if we can even believe it can be more unprecedented than it already is, when Trump's reelected and what he's going to be up against. We've got to have his back and give him our support, because the deep state's still there. So they're going to be sabotaging his, you know, next, you know, presidency, just like they did the last. So, you know, we've got to be firm. We've got to be strong ourselves, not just Trump.
Thank you very much. Drew Thomas Allen, author of America's Last Stand, Will You Vote to Save or Destroy America in 2024? Thanks for joining us, Drew.
Thanks, Mark. My pleasure.
Appreciate it. This has been Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. See you next time.